And welcome back to Dads on the Air, coming to you around Australia on the Community Radio Network. In this program, we bring you informing and entertaining conversations with a wide range of interesting people on topics of fatherhood, family and parenting, men's and boys' issues. Hi, I'm Bill Cable, and our guest today is Dr. Gary Myson, a director of the Australian Institute of Male Health and Studies. Dr. Myson is a senior research fellow with the Adelaide University Rural and Clinical School. He has a number of research interests, but current activity focuses on male health policy, men's sheds, and program evaluations. Gary, welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you, Bill. Glad to be here.
Gary, Australia has had a national men's health policy since 2010. Did we really need this men's health policy in Australia?
I think so, Bill. In fact, the Australian policy is now only one of three policies in the world. There was the first one was in Ireland in 2008, and Brazil came up with one in 2015. And interestingly, we've known since really the late 80s that on most measures of health, males fare poorly when it comes to health. In every age group, for example, males die more often from preventable disease and trauma than their female counterparts. There's significant differences, among the male population. Not all men are the same, obviously, and the average male is certainly different in terms of their health outcomes from certain subgroups of males. And given that we've recognised since about that same time that that women have women and girls have unique health needs, it's taken 30-odd years for that recognition to be enshrined in policy. And really, without policy, then there's no specific funding that comes with it, and we won't really see any substantive changes in what's been, a sad broadcast, really, of men's health over the last 30 years. So prior to the National Men's Health Policy, there was really no coordination or not even a framework that identified the key issues for men's health. And this policy was really a watershed at the time, back in 2010, an initiative of the Rudd and Gillard governments. And it really provided a framework that was positive and recognised the social determinants of health rather than taking a sort of deficit blaming position, and really aimed to build on the strengths of what men and boys offered society, and identified the needs for special initiatives that target their health needs.
So this seems to happen quite a bit in this area. It lagged behind the women. I imagine from what you're saying, there was a women's health policy prior to that.
There's been a women's health policy in Australia since the late 80s, and a whole range of initiatives. There's any breast cancer initiatives and ovarian cancer and a whole range of other things, pink ribbon campaigns and so on. So women have done very well. They've been very proactive in seeing those good health comes come to fruition, and to some extent I think that the men's groups need to look at how they've achieved that and work towards similar frameworks. I mean, interestingly, not only has there been a women's health policy since the late 80s, but there's actually a national office for women at the Commonwealth level, the federal level, and there's equivalent offices for women in every state and territory in Australia, but there are no such administrative structures for men and boys anywhere.
So with the introduction of the National Men's Health Policy, has it led to many changes in men's health in Australia, do you think?
That's a good question, I think, and one can answer that a number of different ways. If you read the policy, you'll note that there's a whole range of factors that have to be addressed. And there's a whole range of factors that influence men's health or the health of men and boys. And unless we, achieve a situation where we're actually addressing those range of factors, that we see the required political will, that we see coordination across government departments, across these sort of traditional silos of responsibilities, across sectors, that change is going to be pretty slow. I think, too, that given that we're talking about population level changes, that's not something that's easy to measure, over the space of months or years. It takes decades. So I think it's probably a bit early yet before we can gauge the effect of policy. And at the moment, too, there's no specific or targeted monitoring and evaluation framework for the policy. So it's going to be difficult on that basis to determine whether any changes we see are actually policy-related or due to other factors. Because this policy was an initiative of the Labor government, since there's been the change in government with Abbott and Turnbull, we don't really know to what extent the current government supports the national mail policy that was put up at that time. We've certainly seen some continuation of some of the smaller funding initiatives around men's sheds and around the longitudinal study in males' health and some statistical reports around men. So that's been good. But, the more broad initiatives, more additional funding really hasn't been forthcoming. So we're sort of in a bit of limbo in that regard. There have been some changes, and whether we can, directly attribute those to the policy or not, is debatable. And I think most of the changes probably are around the awareness sort of issues. Now, we've seen campaigns that target risk-taking and poor health choices, things around drink driving, excessive speed, diabetes, poor diet, that kind of stuff. Some have been male-specific. So we have seen some changes in things like, rates of heart disease in men, reduced smoking rates and so on that we saw, over the last decade or two. That's probably more likely than the national male health policy. But unfortunately, we are seeing some worsening. Rates of suicide are increasing. But again, some of those things are occurring in women as well. So I don't know that you'd point to that as a failure of the policy, but certainly points to the fact that more work needs to be done. And there's still confusion out there regarding things like prostate cancer and osteoporosis screening and so on, which are difficult to overcome. But I think at least it's made men more aware about risk factors and the need to talk to their doctors. So
we're talking about a national health policy. Has it been picked up by the states?
Unfortunately not. Well, at the moment, there are no state-level policies that directly support the health of men and boys. New South Wales did have one. I think the first one was about 2008, but that was defunded, if you like, in 2014 or 15, much to the disappointment of people sort of involved and funded by that program. Victoria had some attempt. South Australia had a policy framework, which they never put into, well, it was a strategic framework. They never put it into policy, and there's been a talk about reviewing that, but again, that hasn't happened. So, and without the state level policies, there's really no vehicle to take the initiatives from the national policy, down to the state and then the more local level. So that, I think, is a significant weakness and really is going to limit what changes that we are likely to see.
And we're speaking with Dr. Gary Myson, a director of the Australian Institute of Male Health and Studies. We're going to take a short break now. Gary, you picked a song for us.
Thanks, Bill. Yes, the first song was Joe Cocker's I Stand in Wonder. I like the song from the first time I heard it. It's probably one of Cocker's lesser-known songs, one of my favourites, I think, originally from the Unchain My Heart album. This song resonated with me because I think if you look at the lyrics, it sort of highlights the importance of social and emotional support for men and the gains that one gets from a supportive partner. And this is, I thought, one of the key determinants of men's health and not something that we as men are very good at acknowledging our need for. And we know that men with a partner are generally happier, healthier and live longer than those without one. So I think this song acknowledges that and reminds us not to take those relationships for granted. So I hope people enjoy it.
I'm sure that's the best introduction this song's ever had. So this is I Stand in Wonder by Joe Cocker.
Back in me when I was so tell me why. Why I was waiting so long. Yeah, it's the power that you had. When I was weak, you made me strong. I stand in wonder of you. And when I'm weary, you take my hand. When I'm troubled, I rest my head on your heart. I know you understand. Now the world's not an easy place, puts a man to the test. And when I come on to you, I know how deeply I'm blessed. I stand in wonder of you. I stand in wonder of you.
As I Stand in Wonder by Joe Cocker, and we're speaking today with Dr. Gary Myson, a director of the Australian Institute of Male Health and Studies. Gary, some people say that men have poor health performance because of males behaving badly. Do you agree with that comment?
Oh, that's certainly a pervasive sentiment that you see in the lay literature, and certainly, no, I don't. I mean, one of the good things about the National Male Health Policy is it really put pay to that as well, to a large extent. This dogma of males behaving badly really has little basis in evidence, and it really ignores the underlying factors that maybe contribute to that perception, I think. I mean, what's also interesting is that no other population group in Australia, women or Aboriginals or migrants or older Australians, have their health needs addressed by simply telling them to change their behaviour. I mean, they always see that there's a problem with service access or the way the services are provided, and this sort of system changes rather than, extolling the actual people who are at risk, if you like, to change their behaviours. I mean, I think there's certainly truth in the notion that many men have what I call a functional view of health. So that means that for many men, they don't actually seek help until they have a functional deficit, so that until they have a problem or the problem's impacting on their daily lives. And I think a lot of men too, because they're problem solvers, tend to delay seeking help. They try to work out what's going on. They seek information from other people, from friends, family, from the internet, before they decide that the problem isn't going away and that maybe they ought to see a doctor. But if you think about it, I mean, that behaviour is really conditioned. I mean, for eons now, males, have been positioned or expected to undertake, the protector role, protecting family, protecting, state, society. And in doing so, they've been conditioned to be strong and brave and stoic, not to minimise, any expressions of pain or illness or weakness. And we condition our young children or young males, big boys don't cry, You know, that kind of thing. And then we've got various rites of passage. We expect our boys to sort of extol on the sporting field, again, to demonstrate, you know, strength and weakness and skill and all that kind of stuff. And people who don't sort of get, you know, the same kind of recognition. And for that reason, I think what we see in certain behaviours and risk-taking behaviours, those rites of passage, are social conditioning. And unless society, you know, can change its expectations, and remember that society still expects you know, men and boys to undertake the most health diminishing and dangerous jobs, you know, whether it be in defence or you know, policing or emergency services, that you know, requires those you know, attributes that we call masculinities or manhood, and really give men a choice. I mean, really, they don't have a choice, even though women are increasingly taking on some of those roles. For many men, it's not a choice.
Yes, I think I saw somewhere that the figures in Australia are that 93% of workplace deaths are males.
That's right, yes. So work health and safety is still a major issue. I think over 70% of injuries are male, and there's something like, so that statistic really just supports that. If people believe that men behave badly, then there's certainly, you know, reason, both societal and I think biology, which are things that are both very hard to change. And until we change our expectations of what we expect from men and boys at the societal level, I think we're going to continue to see the kinds of problems. And for that reason, we need special programs. You know, you have to target those kind of perceptions so that that men can see that there are good reasons for why they're doing it, and maybe they can change certain things, or maybe society can change certain things for them. So being healthy, seeking health advice isn't actually a weakness. And, you know, at the workplace level, you know, you don't get accused of malingering or, you know, shirking your responsibilities, that it's acceptable to be sick and it's acceptable to seek help for it.
Well, there's been a long-term acceptance of the fact that women, on average, live longer than men. But is that difference in life expectancy, is in fact it getting bigger rather than flattening out?
Well, if you go back in Australia, you know, to the to 1900s, I think the difference in life expectancy between men and women was around 3 years. And certainly life expectancy for both men and women has increased over that time. I think mid-50s was the expected survival, whereas now the average man, certainly after 65, can expect to live to about 80 years age, and the average woman about 84, 85. So there has been a slight, actually, increase in the survival differential. So whereas back 100 or more years ago, the difference is about, you know, 3 years, now it's more like 4 or 5. And that's despite all the advances in medical technology and so on. So there's clearly something else going on there. Notwithstanding that, Australian male life expectancy for Australians in general is, you know, in the top 3 or 4 in the world. So, you know, things are pretty good, but they could be better.
You sort of touched on this a little bit then. Do you think men's retirement creates special issues for men as distinct perhaps from what women are facing in retirement?
There are certainly different expectations, I think, for men and women when they retire. For many men, their whole identity and a reason for being relates to work. I mean, their social networks are very much work-related, their sense of purpose and so on. So when men retire, they often they don't realise that they're losing all that. And men are not as good as women at making friends, sort of relationships. And so if they lose those relationships, they find it difficult to develop new ones. And so for that reason, and the research shows that lack of social connectedness, lack of friendship networks present significant risk factors for chronic disease. And in fact, you know, the risk of developing, you know, heart disease from cholesterol and smoking is much the same as if as that caused by not having friendship networks. Retirement can be a significantly traumatic experience for men, and men ought to prepare for retirement a bit better than they do. And we're starting to see that some men retiring and they sort of can't wait to leave work, and then they're finding that they in fact do need something to keep them busy and to restore those relationships and to give them a sense of purpose in their life.
And that's where your involvement in men's sheds comes into play, and it's a general benefit to the community and even for some groups such as Indigenous men, which have an inordinately high level of suicide and shorter lifespan.
Look, that's right. I mean, men's sheds are one of those sort of grassroots phenomena which has sort of grown like mushrooms, in Australia, and now being taken up by other countries. And what they do is they really go a long way to addressing the socialisation aspects for older men in particular in Australia. In other countries, it's a little bit different. But in Australia, sheds are attractive to older men. And I think in part the big reason is that they're places where men can enjoy the company of other men, so it's something that a lot of men sort of said in their workplaces. But it also gives them a sense of belonging to something that's useful and worthwhile. They can share a whole range of things, their life stories, their skills and their knowledge. They develop sort of a camaraderie and a friendship network, and they can also do meaningful activities. So, things that they see as being productive and that contribute not only to themselves or the shed, but also to the community in general. So, I think that that really is the reason for the popularity of sheds. In Indigenous populations, I think, again, there's been some work that has suggested that it's a vehicle for Indigenous men maybe to address some of the issues of loss and grief and dislocation and their changing position in society. Probably not in the sense necessarily of a shed, but more as a meeting space for men and their culture. You know, there was a clear separation of what men and women's business was about, and sort of traditions to pass on cultural traditions to younger people, and also maybe to create a space where they can actually have health checks or have health services, which is sort of done in a male friendly and a male acceptable situation, as opposed to them having to go to major Aboriginal health services, which are really orientated towards women and children.
It's a great Australian invention. So Gary, we've reached a stage of the program where we ask our guests if they'd like to pick a song. Would you like to tell us which one you've picked now and which and why you picked it?
Oh, okay, thank you. The second song was A Slice of Heaven by Dave Dobbin. I've always liked this song. I don't know if it was the melody or whatever, but I like the Murray Ball cartoon series, Rot Flats, and this song I think was part of the soundtrack for the movie. But it's the flip side of the Joe Cocker song that we heard earlier. Some people say this is about Dave Dobbin's childhood in New Zealand, but to me it talks of the need to support your partner when they're going through sort of tough times, so which is really all about everybody needing somebody to support through life challenges. And it also sort of says that relationships are a two-way street. So while the Joe Cockers acknowledge that that the partners can support the men, I think this says that the partner will need support and that we should be tuned into the mood of our partners.
And that was Slice of Heaven by Dave Dobbin. Don't forget, we'd love to hear from any of our listeners. You can go to our website, dadsontheair.com.au, and send us an email and we'll be in touch. If you'd like to listen to this show again or any of our shows, go to our website, dadsontheair.com.au, or you can follow us on Facebook or Twitter. So it just remains for me now to thank our special guest today, Dr. Gary Myson. Gary, thank you very much for being on the program.
Thanks very much, Bill. Great to be invited to talk.
And we'll be back next week with another show. So for now, that's goodbye from Dads on the Air.